No, I was drafted and was drafted in Fort Snelling, Minnesota. And then I went to camp there, Oregon. And when I was in Oregon, they invaded Africa. So then they said, the infantry, they're not digging foxholes, they just dug slit trenches. So we're going to send you to Bend, Oregon, where you dig a 6x6. And that's what we did. And then they took and drove tanks over us to be sure. But it would cave in. They claim in Africa that it would cave in, but it would cave in up to your waist, and then they'd pull you out. So you got the regular training on learning about that.
And that was your training when you were in Oregon?
Yeah, that was in Bend, Oregon. So then they said, next, the war is going so good in Africa, we're going to send you to Italy. So then we took training for 3 months in Needles, California, the same terrain as in Italy. And we trained there for 3 months. And then they said, the war is going so good in Italy, we're going to give you training to go to France. So then we went to Camp Carson, Colorado, and we trained there to knock out pillboxes and gun emplacements. So we went overseas then, and it took us 13 days to get there. And I suppose we got there about 10 days after the invasion on Omaha. We landed on Omaha Beach, and Germans, they chased them back, I suppose, about 20 miles. So we landed directly from the United States in France. So then from France, we was in reserve then at the Battle of Brest. And so when we was ready to go in there, they surrendered the Germans, and it was every kind of a uniform there was. They just chased all the Germans in there. There was airmen, there was navy men and army and everything. And we stood there, and they marched all the prisoners through our lines. So then from there, then we went to Brussels, Belgium, and then Field Marshal Montgomery from England, he pulled back his Canadian army, and he replaced them with our 104th Timberwolf Division. And then on our right was the Polish army, and on the left was Field Marshal Montgomery.
And tell me, what year was this?
This is all in 1944. So then we set up in Belgium, then in Prince Bernard's castle, our division took over that as headquarters. And then from there, then they said, you're going into Holland. So I was the first truck with my anti-tank gun to go into Holland. And we hit the big tree that the Germans, we couldn't get through it, to cross the road. So we called back for the engineers, and the engineers, they came and pulled the tree back, and the flare went up, and then the artillery went up and down the road. And our colonel says, after this slacked up a little, he said, we better try and see. We'll send one truck, they said, up to see if the Germans are still taking care of that road. And everybody, all the rest, our company commander, I got letters showing, he said, we all told our lieutenant, our battalion commander, you're nuts, or you're either crazy. You can't send nobody to the artillery. But he got his way, and he let us, sent us up, and artillery laid down right ahead of our truck. We stopped, and we took down the di went in the ditch, And then it got quiet. We jumped on again. And then we just got the trucks going a little ways, and they hit us again with artillery fire. So we stopped again. And then the third time we took off, we got away from them. And then we got around below the hill. And then the German machine guns sprayed our truck from one end to the others. And my sergeant and my first gunner and I, we crept around behind the machine gun. And we kept on till earlier morning. And then finally, we went through the German lines, and they captured us. And I got a buddy from Edmonton, Washington, and he said he's in the next truck from me. And he says, we backed up and they sent you forward. He said, we watched artillery. We were sure you would be killed, they said. So they had no hopes for us.
How many soldiers were captured at that time with you?
It was just one squad.
What went through your mind when you were captured? Were you scared that you would be killed?
Yeah. So the town we were supposed to take was Breda Holland, and they marched us down to Breda Holland, and then the Germans were pulling back, so in the basement, then they were hauling up all kinds of equipment, and I was supposed to head to the German army. He come over to us, and he could speak just as good English as we could, and he wanted information because we were new there. We was the first Timberwolf divisions to come in there. And we said, all we can give you is name, rank, and serial number. So then he lined us up against, they had them stone fences all over there. And he says, well, line us up. And he pulled his pistol. He says, well, then I better shoot you three. He said, there was just three of us left. So at that time, our American artillery started to shell Breda Holland. And the shells landed all around us. And then that Ohio official, he put his pistol back in his pocket, and he got scared because the artillery was landing all around us, see? So he just told the guards, take him in the truck, take him away from here. So that's what we did.
How long were you held captive then?
I was for 6 months. Mm. Yeah.
Tell me about what it was like when you were being held. Where were you, and or did you stay in one spot for that same six
no,
months?
As soon as that Ohio official got rid of us, they sent us by train to Auschwitz concentration camp, where they killed the Jews, and they had two big ovens in there, and there was two, three rows of water where they could give you showers, you know. And the Germans laughed, and they said, you Americans, we're not going to kill you. We're just going to give you a shower and de-louse your clothes, and then we're going to send you on your way. But he says, the Jews, we gassed them. There's gas jets all the way around up there. And if they don't die quick enough, we got canisters we throw in there. And as soon as all the Jews lay down dead, he says, see all them pails all the way around there. We take and knock all the teeth out of the Jews because they're rich. They got a lot of gold in their teeth, see? So that's what they did, he said.
And you showered in one of the gas chambers.
Yeah, we showered in the same gas chambers as they killed the Jews, yeah.
What did that feel like?
Well, it was, well, we just was going to live from day to day, and you didn't know what was going to happen, you know, from then on. Where they was ready to shoot us there, you know.
Tell me about when you were released.
That was April 22nd, at 3 minutes after six. The Russian army come in there, and Marshal Koning's troops liberated us. And
were you in Auschwitz at that time?
No, then we was at Luckenwald, west of Berlin, see. They moved us from Auschwitz to Luckenwald. So then the Russians come, and well, they said, we're gonna repatriate you through Moscow, and we get $25 for each person that we repatriate. So we said, "Nah, we're not going to do that." So then a news commentator, I think from the Time magazine, he flew over with an airplane. The Americans laid on the West Elbe River, about 20 miles. See, he dropped leaflets and he says, "We didn't know there's a prison camp here," because the Time reporter, he'd went into Berlin to take pictures of the Russians destroying Berlin, and he come to our camp and he said, "I'll tell the voice back there that there's a prison camp here, Americans." So right away, then as soon as they, towards the evening, the plane flew over and said, "Stay in camp, we'll pick you up in the morning." So then the next morning, I suppose 20, 30 ambulances and maybe 30, 40, 2.5 ton trucks come to pick us up, because there was 5,000 Americans there in that prison camp.
There are 5,000.
There was 5,000 Americans. So then Russia said, "No, we're not going to let them go, but we let the sick and the dying." So I had hepatitis, and they put me on the ambulance, and then the rest of the boys, they threw wire cutters over and they cut the fence down, and all the drivers said, "Come below the hill here." They said, "We'll load you there, and heck with the Russians." So that's how they got out too, see.
So what did you think of the Germans and Russians at that time?
Oh, they were wicked to each other. We had the Russians in right next to us, and downstairs they had cells for them, just like your prison. And in the daytime they would make them work, and about every morning they took two, three on the wheelbarrow, dead ones, and they dumped them in a little cubelet about like this. And we didn't know what it was till the war was over. And it was a lime pit. They just dumped them in there and poured lime on them. And then I went over and looked after when the Russians come, and there was bones and lime and everything down there about 10, 15 feet. See, so
Russians in there?
yeah, all the Russians said they threw them in there and they poured lime on them to eat them up. See, yeah, so that's how they treated each other.
How did you feel about them from the American standpoint?
Well, we never did think much about the Russians, but the Germans, they were seemed to be easy on Americans, and it was a multi the camp where it was in. There was every nationality there was, but it was tight security. See, it had to be officers or non-commissioned officers, and our Norwegian general from Norway, Rungi, he was our head commander the whole area. And I would talk to the Norwegian across the fence, and they had a relation at Canton and Abearsford and everything, but we couldn't get no addresses across. That was against their rules, see. So that's how. So then Rungi come over after the Russians come in and come over and shook my hands, and so I knew him.
Tell me what it felt like when you came back to the United States.
Well, when I come back to the United States, I didn't say nothing to nobody. And my son-in-law was Larry Grimley, and he said, he looked at my discharge. He said, "You got a lot of medals coming." He says, "Why don't you apply for them?" And that's 25 years I never said anything about the war. And so when I got my medals, then I started to talk. I was froze before. I wouldn't say anything to nobody. And it helped when I joined the POWs in Sioux Falls here. We all tell stories about each other.
Why do you think that helps?
Well, that really helped. Even today, I can be sitting at home and we're having coffee or something, and maybe something comes up, and I have to tell my wife. And it helps. It helps to do that.
Why do you think for 25 years you didn't say anything?
I don't know. It seemed like you just froze, so you didn't want to say nothing about anything. No.